by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass makes heaven in the middle of it. Grass makes heaven in the middle. We are grass makes heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. The first clip here is Steve Pachinik stating outright that 9/11 was an inside job. So here we go with Steve Pachinik interviewed by Alex Jones. Here we go now.
There's no question this was an inside job. Before 9/11, the year before, after having helped Bush Jr. go into the presidency, which was my biggest mistake, I went around to the Department of Defense and I was asked to look for specific jobs. And as I went around, I saw something very unusual. I saw CIA operatives in every military position that I was interested in, from Solik to other areas. It doesn't matter. I went to Andy Marshall, who was the head of the Office of Net Assessment, trained at the University of Chicago, never served in a war. But I knew he was in charge of Cheney, Rumsfeld, Zalmay Khalilzad, a whole bunch of neocons. And what in fact happened a year later, 4 months before 9/11, I had a knock on the door from two Mossad operatives who really didn't know what they were doing. They were quite stupid, which I think Mossad is normally. They knocked on the door in Chevy Chase and asked if they could use my phone. I said, under no condition. They pursued. I threw them out. So when 9/11 came around, the first person they had to ask about what happened was me. And I said, there's no question this is an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Steve Hadley, Frank Fukuyama, Richard Pearl, I knew them all. Most of them went to Cornell and the rest went to Yale. And I said, these are the corrupt cowards, what we call chicken hawks, who are involved in creating a 9/11.
And we are back. Well, I really appreciate Dr. Steve Pachinik for joining us 2 days in a row. I wanted to get him on about 9/11. And 19 years later, which is today, but we got into a bunch of other subjects. And so he's here with us for two long segments, one short segment, ahead of the Hodge brothers joining us. So let's plunge right into it. He's credited with the only successful peace deal. Now, Trump's got some. We hope those end up working for a while. But the Camp David Accord, co-founding Delta Force with General Schumacher and Boykin, and then, of course, working in other administrations, worked in five administrations in regime change and other clandestine operations. And a lot of the things he's talked about here on air, he's revealed first. He also co-wrote a lot of books as kind of the Jack Ryan source for what couldn't be put in a nonfiction book but was put in the Tom Clancy franchise, which a lot of those got turned into major movies. But in the time we have, let's just get right to it. What was the motive of 9/11? Who was behind it? Why is it important? Because, again, we're not saying radical Islam doesn't exist. We're not saying that. But clearly, the stand down, Building 7, how do you want to attack this up front? And you talk about being in rooms with top generals, that said point blank, yeah, it was an inside job. Dr. Steve Pachinik, thanks for your courage.
There's no question this was an inside job. Before 9/11, the year before, after having helped Bush Jr. go into the presidency, which was my biggest mistake, I went around to the Department of Defense and I was asked to look for specific jobs. And as I went around, I saw something very unusual. I saw CIA operatives in every military position that I was interested in, from Solik to other areas. It doesn't matter. I went to Andy Marshall, who was the head of the Office of Net Assessment, trained at the University of Chicago, never served in a war. But I knew he was in charge of Cheney, Rumsfeld, Zalmay Khalilzad, a whole bunch of neocons. And what in fact happened a year later, 4 months before 9/11, I had a knock on the door from two Mossad operatives who really didn't know what they were doing. They were quite stupid, which I think Mossad is normally. They knocked on the door in Chevy Chase and asked if they could use my phone. I said, under no condition. They pursued. I threw them out. So when 9/11 came around, the first person they had to ask about what happened was me. And I said, there's no question this is an inside job. Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Steve Hadley, Frank Fukuyama, Richard Pearl. I knew them all. Most of them went to Cornell and the rest went to Yale. And I said, these are the corrupt cowards, what we call chicken hawks, who are involved in creating a 9/11. Now, how did I know that? Not only did I go around and see Doug Feith and others who never belonged at Department of Defense, I also questioned one of my neighbors who, in fact, was a CIA operative at the DOD and knew the entire story. And I got from her the entire story of who was involved, the names and people involved. I put it in the book, American Warrior in Crisis, if people want to look at the various names. The key point was that Cheney Rumsfeld, Cheney in particular, whom I knew from the Nixon administration, as I did Rumsfeld, was a coward, probably the most treasonous coward we have ever had in the United States. He refused to serve us in Vietnam 11 different times with the assistance of his wife, and now he has a daughter who, to me, it's absurd. So what did we learn from that event? Nothing. What I learned from it is, number one, the military can be manipulated and really can't win a war. Our intelligence service, all the way from the CIA, Gina Haspel, to Tenet, to all the others who were in charge, Robert Goss, they were all compromised and were involved. Number four, I knew Bush Jr. was involved in the same way his father, Bush Sr., was involved in creating a war in the Middle East, which we had no reason to do. Both men, not only Bush Jr., had failed in the military. Contrary to the myth that's propagated about Bush Sr., he was not a war hero. He bailed out of the plane and allowed eight of his airmen to die. He was a coward. Bush Jr., a coward, corrupt. Cheney, a coward. I said to Rumsfeld, you're a coward. I know exactly what you did. He went on the radio the next day after I accused him and the administration. He said, if somebody accuses the Republicans of doing 9/11, which is called a false flag and a standout, then you have to accuse the Democrats for doing Pearl Harbor. Well, as many of you know, the false flags of Pearl Harbor means that we knew exactly what's going to happen at Pearl Harbor. We wanted to sacrifice 3,000 to 4,000 men in order to precipitate a war. Same way the LBJ had a false flag in Vietnam. John F. Kennedy had a false flag.
Let me stop you. Gulf of Tonkin, and that's absolutely true. And let's just go back. Rebuilding America's defenses, April 1st, 2020, Dick Cheney pens that report for the new American century and says we need a new Pearl Harbor, 3,000 dead. Yeah. I don't know how they hit it just right less than a year later. I mean, they really did a good job.
Well, it's not that they did a good job. They were craven individuals. Zalmay Khalilzad worked for me on the West Bank. He's a disaster. He created the war in Afghanistan. He's a CIA operative.
Sure, sure. I was being sarcastic, but I mean, so you knew before it even came, and you were a big member of the CFR, all of this. I remember you resigned after all of this.
I left because I knew exactly who in the CFR was involved in 9/11, and I told them, I'm going to be the first American to lead your organization in, what, 120 years? I could care less. The CFR was compromised. You had the United States government compromised. Our military intelligence, our civilian intelligence, our Department of Justice was compromised. The White House was compromised, and the House of Representatives sent anything else left. Then what they did was to turn around the narrative and say, God, we are conspiracy truthers, as if we had the burden in order to explain why this coward and moron who was elected twice was involved in a 9/11 stand down and false flag. And we had the biggest coward in our history, a treasonous man. He should have been taken out. He should have gone to jail. Of course, nobody did it. Cheney didn't go to jail. Rumsfeld didn't go to jail. By the way, Black Lives Matter, I'm going to be very nice. We had Colin Powell, Secretary of State, a pathological liar. In Vietnam, he lied about the incidents. And then when he was in the Bush administration, he lied about anthrax. He was as dumb as they come out of CCNY.
Let's talk about what was the motive of 9/11. What's the motive?
Let me give you another equal opportunity. Condoleezza Rice, whom I knew very well from Stanford.
She told Willie Brown, do not fly to New York that week. And so was the Joint Chiefs, was told. That's all on record.
Correct. But she was a liar, national security advisor, a coward. And what do? They retread everybody. The Hoover Institute right now, you got John Woo, you got Condoleezza Rice. And I said to the Hoover Institute, stick it up. You're out of control. The Rand Corporation, all of these guys out of control. And unfortunately for me, I knew, I was not surprised because I'm not a cynic. I'm a realist. I grew up in Europe. I saw the French collaborate with the Germans. I saw the French beat up Algerians, Moroccans, and then assassinate 1 million Tutsis in Rwanda. What I know is that we have lied and we have prevaricated and we killed our own people. Not the first time, not the last time. But if anybody comes out to be sanctimonious about it, they better be careful. Because I was the first one interviewed in this entire episode, and I said under no condition was this Islamic terrorist.
Well, let's talk about that. But you also said right after it happened, you met with a top general who confirmed to you it was staged.
Correct. And I said to the generals, and I sat down with them, I'm not going to name them. I said, you have two choices. Either you resign and I'm going to court-martial you, or you start to rethink what you're doing and get the civilians out of the Pentagon. That meant Doug Fife, Paul Wolfowitz. Eventually, Paul Wolfowitz, a pathetic, cowardly individual who came out of Cornell University, by the way, one of the big universities to push 9/11, it had Paul Wolfowitz, it had Steve Hadley, Frank Fukuyama, and Sandy Berger from the Clinton administration. Cornell never said a word.
Now, Dr. Pachinik, stay there. I know people that are in the know understand what you're saying. Well, most listeners do as well. But let's, I won't say dumb it down, but let's just walk through this one and come back. Because you have this civilian take over the military, but they don't know about the consequences. And they do these crazy false flags. We did see a revolution in the military after all this to try to kick them out. How has that gone? And is Trump the culmination of that revolution to get the U.S. military back in control of themselves? We're not going to take it lying down. Look, I went on air that day and knew those were controlled demolitions. I heard them say they blew up Building 7, the CIA headquarters. I got physically sick on air seeing elements of our government did that because I love America. I knew it was globalist imposters. And people ask me, once Obama got in and things moved on, why I didn't cover 9/11 as much? Well, because it was about getting that group of neocons and who did that. And I was still exposing false flags, but just I wasn't making my fifth or sixth film on it. I wasn't harping on it every day because people would think then that the government did it when it was criminal elements that did it. And so it actually became destructive of the country. So I want to be clear. People ask, why didn't you keep harping on 9/11? I still talk about it quite a bit. We have guests on. It's important to revisit sometimes. But how do you expose the criminal elements that did this while at the same time not destroying patriotism and having it blow back like the left uses 9/11 to hurt America when I don't really see it as America that was doing it? You're not just a psychiatrist. You're a, old school hand of the world, Dr. Pachinik. I mean, how do we address something? Justice be done. May the heavens fall. But, at a certain point, I still talk about 9/11, but justice never happened. So then it almost just becomes destructive to constantly cover it.
Not really, my friend. We will not see justice vis-a-vis this issue. We will not. I mean, that's just a point of fact. That's exactly what I've learned the day after that. No one would be held accountable. You and I can repeat the story. We will be put in Wikipedia as truthers, as conspiracy theorists. That's the price that you and I pay for telling the truth. It's the same price when I said, look, Abraham Lincoln was not a great liberator of slaves. He was a tyrant. When he was assassinated, the words were, thus always with tyrants. And so we create our own narratives, which are totally false. You and I will continue that. People will cover that over. When you see Wikipedia, it's pathetic. When I was reading exactly what happened in 9/11, it was pathetic. So they had a separate section which said truthers. what the truthers say. And that's how pathetic intellectualism. You're talking about the end of American intellectualism. You're talking about the end of a capacity that we had at one time.
No, but I agree. But I mean, at the time we have, we come back for 5 hours to do this again because it's so important historically. Because I want to cover, I just want to cover it right. I know you have a lot of gravitas in this area, and what you're saying is a key witness to all this, Dr. Pachinik. So the neocons and others are behind it. They wanted it for domestic police state to take over the Middle East. In context of 2020, why is it important?
Because you have to understand now that we have a system that really doesn't always work for the people and by the people, except for one little notation, which is important. We have a new person who has not been part of the CIA, not been part of the military, not been part of anything other than business. And his job today is to do business. And that's the only salvation we have so that whatever.
So it's the maverick, sui generis, of his own kind thing is why they hate Trump and why that's and the sui generis movement is the answer.
Correct. I mean, we, for whatever reasons, we allowed and created a man to come in at this point whom, ironically, everybody involved in 9/11, including the Democrats, and Biden was involved, and the Clintons were involved, and the Bushes, says, oh, he's a pathological liar. Really?
Have you seen the videos of the day after where he said they clearly blew the towers up with bombs?
Correct. And not only did I see them, but I also heard him say on the same day, because I had followed Trump for over 30, 40 years, he said, my, those buildings are pretty strong. I wonder how they can bring them down. So he was basically saying exactly what everybody else knew. Now, he will play the part of a president that continues that narrative. But beyond that, he will not trust anybody, and correctly so. He has his own family to work with. He has pointed.
Well, that's why they call him dumb, because he doesn't tell any of those people what he really thinks.
Really? I mean, it's what you and I talked about. You're that dumb that you created all these condominiums, three.
You're that dumb you just beat the whole deep state and then held them off for 4 years?
Of course, and became a multi-billionaire several times over, though he had bankruptcy. I'd like to be that dumb. I want to be as dumb as somebody like that who can basically say whatever you want to hear, Woodward. And by the way, Woodward is now getting it. Congratulations to you, Alex. They want to know why Woodward held it for 6 months, that particular secret that was far more lethal. Because Woodward, once again, is a coward. He's a CIA operative out of Yale. It doesn't change. These people have been highly compromised. A friend of mine said to me, why are you attacking the CIA when I was trained by it? And I said to this friend who was head of the U.S. Institute of Peace and came out of MIT, I said to him, you will see why I never belonged to anything except the Republic. I was allowed to join the military. I served five presidents.
Because you've got to owe allegiance to the idea and the people and the dirt, not to some corrupt Ivy League elitist institution.
That's exactly what happened. And I said, I pledge allegiance to the Republic. That's why I came back with the generals, Keith Alexander and others, and said, this is your time to be in charge. No more Rumsfeld, no more Cheney's, no more Bushes. I don't want chicken hawks here. I want guys who
think. Why do you think Alexander's going over to Amazon?
I'm sorry, Keith Alexander?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, he is very, very bright. And
No, you said for a long time he'd be the good head of Cyber Command.
Correct. And he was head of Cyber Command. And then his junior subordinate is Nakasone, who's head of Cyber Command, also excellent. These guys, Keith went to the academy. Nakasone did not. And then I'm proposing a General Brown for the Air Force to be head of Space Command and space warfare. So we have people on board who are going to be able to do things. I'm proud that Keith will take over Amazon. They need him. He understands cyber control. The world has changed in 20 years. Number one, you have become a predominant source of information. The New York Times is done. The Washington Post is done. The Wall Street Journal is done.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if I've become the prominent thing, but definitely part of it. But, yeah, what are they going to do? Because no one believes a damn word they say, and they just keep, like, CNN especially is like a zombie, undead creature that won't go away, but no one listens to it.
I mean, what do you want about Anderson Cooper? He's an openly gay guy who forgets to tell you he had two internships at the CIA. And once again, he too is compromised. It's almost as if every one of them checked their brains right at the agency or somewhere else. But the truth of the matter is I could care less about the CIA or the other 16 intelligence units. They're useless.
I was going to say, the issue is these people are followers. Who is in control of them? Because whoever's in control is pretty stupid.
They were stupid, but there's a new guy who's in control, and his name is Grinnell. And I listened to how he was handling the issues as a former ambassador to Germany. Insightful, smart.
Oh, yeah, he confronted the media and said, don't you understand last week? You're obsolete.
Correct. And he said, you're not relevant. You're immature. You're childish. Let me tell you about Serbia and Kosovo. And somebody wanted to ask him about being gay. He said, it's not relevant. Let's talk about policy. So I think Trump put in a great guy in the intelligence network, and I hope he takes down a lot of it, reorganizes it, use Wilbur Ross.
Well, that's my next question. If Trump gets four more years, which we hope he does, I think he needs a really clean house. Let's talk about when we come back how you would do that. You were called into some administrations to clean house because we've got to remove all this deadwood. These people are crazy. And now it's come out that Robert Mueller was wiping all the phones illegally, didn't even care, like he was above the law. These people are crazy.
They're not crazy what they are. You know, Mueller served us well in Vietnam, and then he had to, what we call suck up to power. And Mueller should be ashamed of himself because as an Episcopalian, he really denigrated both our country and both his own religion. And to this day, he has never said mea culpa. This is an intellectual who should have gone out of his way to say, I'm not going to do it.
Well, did he not look completely broken in testimony last year? I mean, he looked like a ghost.
Correct. He was totally unintelligible. But none of them have come forward and say, mea culpa. I've made a mistake. I wanted reform. So the notion of Judeo-Christian overtones in this society is nonsense. It's just a myth. And what comes forth? You got the Alex Jones, alternative media.
We got to go to break, stephenshenick.com. But what I'm asking is, I agree with you, they're a bunch of order followers. So who's in command? Obama? Hillary? Soros? Because I study these people and I watch them, and they have they get a script, and they follow it even after they've lost. They're still following three-year-old scripts. Like, there's no one in command. They're following the last election and fighting the last war, and that's actually horrifying. We'll be right back in 2 minutes, final segment of Steve Channing. Then the Hodge twins, who are mega viral, join us. Stay with us. We're 52 days out.
Our last clip today is my interview I had with Dave Von Kleist, and he did two fine videos, In Plain Sight and The Ripple Effect. And I'll have those posted up on thesecrettruth.com. Here we go with Dave Von Kleist.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. I've got really one of the finest guests I've ever interviewed over the years with me this evening, Dave Von Kleist. Welcome to The Secret Truth.
Well, hello, George, and thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, Dave, you've done so much over the years, and especially since this is the anniversary of 9/11, you did a documentary, and how did you get involved? Let's go back here. Tell us a little bit about your beginnings in radio and things like that, and then we'll develop that into 9/11. Why don't you tell us about yourself?
Well, I suppose I should start at the beginning. I always was, and I always will be a musician. And a vocalist. I've been, you know, like I said, a musician all my life, and I do voices, character voices. I used to, when I first started in broadcasting, I was doing commercials and announcements for an ABC television affiliate in New Haven, Connecticut. And that was WTNH, Channel 8. And that was back in the, mid to late 80s. And this is when I started my waking up process. I remember during the first Gulf War with George Bush Sr. and Norman Schwarzkopf and Colin Powell, Saddam Hussein. We all remember that.
Yeah.
I was in the newsroom one afternoon when they were sending back some raw video feeds from Iraq. Now, this was not on the air. This is what they call B-roll. It's just video with no audio. And the cameras came on. And I was shocked to see our military dozers dozing bodies of men, women, and children into a common grave behind the backdrop of apartment buildings and playgrounds. And I was shocked at the carnage. I just, oh my God, what is this? And then, of course, that evening on ABC News, World News Tonight with Peter Jennings, you know, more Americans get their news from ABC than any other source. And now, Peter Jennings. And then Peter Jennings gets on and says, well, the bombings continued in Baghdad today, but of course, there were no civilian casualties because America's using smart bombs. And I was livid.
What do you mean
there were no civilian casualties? I saw it with my own eyes. And so that was right there a slap in the face of how the media massages, deletes, edits, completely reverses reality. And that set me off on the path. And again, that was 1991, as I believe that was. And so I began a campaign. I mean, I was at that point, I started listening to alternative news sources because I knew that the networks were certainly not going to tell you the truth. And so I started listening to alternative radio networks. I remember listening to the For the People radio network with Chuck Harder. And I listened to Tom Valentine. And, of course, there was William Cooper. He was on, I believe that was the Sun Radio Network. He was on WWCR, and his program was called The Hour of the Time. And so this was my early stages of waking up. And it also motivated me to see if I couldn't get my own radio talk show. So at the time, I was living in Connecticut, and I contacted a bunch of the local stations. And there was one radio station in Waterbury, Connecticut, and that offered me a slot to fill in for someone who was on vacation.
Okay.
So I went in, I sat in at AM 1320, WATR. And anyway, after 2 weeks, the response was so positive that they ended up offering me my own show. So that's how I started my talk radio career. And during that period of time, I interviewed folks like Daniel New, Anthony Hilder. I had Bill Cooper on as a guest, Ted Gunderson, and of course Joyce Riley.
Okay.
And Joyce and I became friends, and we started networking with each other because we both had a very deep interest in the Gulf War and what was happening with the veterans. And this is why we ended up coming together and eventually got married. And became, I suppose you could call us a dynamic duo of veterans' rights.
You know,
and,
that Power Hour was a wonderful program, but that it was a male and female. Y'all worked good on that, didn't you?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Well, Joyce was a real meat and potatoes kind of gal as far as information was concerned. I was more the radio personality.
Yeah.
Of course, with the background with doing music and doing comedy and doing character voices. I think this is what made the show so popular is because Joyce would throw stuff on the table. Like I said, she used the meat and potatoes. I was a salt, pepper, cayenne, and sugar.
You know? Oh, that was good. So, and you still have a good radio voice, a wonderful voice, Dave.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. And I'll tell you, I'm sort of fast forwarding a bit.
Sure,
When Joyce and I did the show, of course, in the very beginning, it was all about helping the veterans. We were giving away free products to anyone who would contact us if they had problems. We were giving away document packages. We were giving away video, VCR tapes and cassettes and document packages and health products like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 soap. We were shipping this stuff out to the veterans at no charge whatsoever.
Right.
And, of course, for everybody else, we were asking that you support our cause by buying these products.
Sure.
And the show, the Power Hour, it started the end of 99, beginning of 2000. And it became wildly popular. We had so much support, and we began selling a lot of products, which was wonderful. But what happened is that the show became so popular, and we started bringing in a lot of revenue. And over the years, what happened is to me, the show seemed to be turning into an infomercial.
Okay.
And I was concerned about that, because I wanted us to put back into the cause And this is where Joyce and I started to have a difference of philosophy.
Okay.
And and anyway, and then of course, you know, during that period of time, I was on the air the morning of September 11th, and I suppose I should get into that for a second.
Yeah, what, boy? You were live that morning then. My gosh.
Yes, I was, and I remember. Taylor, hold on a second. I got to move my earbuds for a second.
Sure, here. You bet.
I got tangled up with my my reading glasses. But yeah, I was getting ready to go on the air, and at the time, you know, Joyce and I were living in Versailles, Missouri.
Okay.
So I had built this little radio room, and we had a digital phone line to hook up to the GCN network up there in Minneapolis.
Sure, sure.
And so anyway, I went out to our little radio room, and I started turning everything on, and I turned on the digital phone line and got connected. And I said, "Hello, you there? Yeah, hi. You got a good copy on me there? Does it sound okay? How are the levels? Check, check, check. Oh, everything sounds good? Okay, great. How much time have I got? 30 seconds. Great. Okay. Okay, let's see here. I need my news stories here. I have my bumper music over here. Let me turn on my CNN monitor, and I'll turn on my Fox monitor, and oh, my, what's going on?
Right.
Oh, my God. And I'm on the air in 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, before we play the intro music, before we do anything on this radio broadcast, listen carefully. I need you to run. Don't walk to your television. Put in a blank tape and start taping any network you can. Something horrible is going on in New York City right now. Go. Do it. Put a tape in. Do it now. Go. So all over the country, and at the time, the show, we had like 65, something like that, 65 radio stations, AM and FM, around the country. Plus, we were on international shortwave, satellite, internet, and I believe at the time we were on XM at the same time. Maybe not. I don't remember. But anyway, the point is that all over the country, people slapped those tapes and started recording. 3 minutes later, at 9:03 Eastern Time, the second tower was
dead. Oh, my God.
On live television.
Yeah.
Now, needless to say, it was a horrible, horrible day to have to broadcast. Because I grew up in New York City. I mean, I spent my wonder years in Brooklyn and Manhattan.
You did? Are you a New Yorker then, huh?
Yeah, I was born in Buffalo, New York, and then in my early years, I mean, I went to grade school in Brooklyn.
Really?
And spent a couple of years, sixth grade and seventh grade, I was in New York City in Manhattan.
Okay.
So I am no stranger to New York, and I remember those towers slowly crawling their way into the sky.
Yes, yes.
So I was pretty much traumatized. But what happened is about 2 weeks later, there was a press conference with GW. And George Bush was on TV, and he said, "We got to stop showing these terrible attacks on America no more, because America needs time to heal." So the networks stopped showing replays of the attacks or any of the other stuff.
Okay.
So at the same time, I started getting videotapes in the mail from all over the country. I had CNN, Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS. I had all the network coverage. However, I also had WOR, WPIX, WNEW, WJAR, the local stations, all the live broadcasts from them. Now, since GW had said, "Hey, we're not going to show this on TV anymore," the networks didn't show, they weren't replaying this stuff. And, of course, they own that footage. Fox has Fox footage. CNN has CNN footage.
Right.
ABC, NBC, CBS, they've got all their own footage. And you could bet your bippy that they're not going to release that information because the president said that he doesn't want you to see it. Anyway, I ended up with a box with videotapes from all over the country. And I realized I was probably the only place in the country, I was the only person who had access to all the footage. So when the conspiracy theories all started coming out, I started going through all of this stuff. Now, keep in mind that in the previous years before 9/11, Joyce and I were traveling all over the country to help the veterans. We had made a lot of friends at all branches of service, all levels of intel. So, you know, a lot of these people knew that neither one of us had fallen off of a turnip truck. So the bottom line here is I started going through the videos and put together the first documentary film called 9/11 in Plain Sight. And that was released in 2004. Now, it immediately went viral. It was on television in Europe. It was on in Japan. It was on not once, but twice in Australia on the ABC network. And ABC in Australia is the Australian broadcasting company. And so anyway, I was obviously attacked with a name like Von Kleist. He has to be a Nazi,
yeah,
of course.
but that is a very prominent family in Prussia, wasn't it?
In Germany, yeah.
Yeah, in Germany. Yeah, yeah. And
but I wouldn't know anything about that. I was born here.
Yeah,
know?
I know,
American.
But I think your name is a titled a family, I believe, in Prussia. Goes way back, you know?
Yeah, going way back, yeah. I mean, the lineage does go back several centuries.
Sure,
it's
a prominent family in Prussia and all that, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, anyway, I started getting attacked, and it was on TV in Australia, not once, but twice. And the news director of the ABC network down there was saying, oh, this guy's a conspiracy theorist, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And the editor of the Sydney, I think it's the Sydney Herald, which is the, you know, Sydney, Australia, big newspaper there. And he put an editorial that this guy was, that, you know, that I was nuts and I was this and I was that. And then, so the 9/11 truth community down under is to say, hey, look, why don't you debate?
Okay.
Australia.
Yeah, okay. You sort of dropped out there for
a
second.
There was a huge.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry?
Yeah, you sort of dropped out there for a second, but I can hear you good now.
Oh, okay, sorry. So anyway, the 9/11 truthers down there decided to fly me to Sydney because, of course, I was having all these attacks from the Australian media. They said, well, why don't you debate Dave Von Kleist? And they said, yeah, we'll debate him. So they flew me to Sydney, and there was a huge conference there. William Rodriguez, he's the key master, if you remember. He's the
yes,
guy that had the master key to get people out of the towers.
Yes.
But they flew William there. There was also a member of the Japanese parliament who had seen my video, and he called an emergency session of the Japanese parliament and had them all watch 9/11 in
my gosh,
plain
right,
sight. And the next day, withdraw all support from the Middle East.
Really?
So, anyway, yeah. So anyway, point is that they flew me down there and, well, wouldn't you know, they refused to show up to debate me. You know?
My gosh.
So,
man,
yeah,
that's not much of a debate, is it? It's a lecture, then, is what ended up, right?
No, it wasn't. The thing that frustrated the hell out of them was that the idea that I didn't have any theories. They kept trying to say that I was a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
But I didn't propose any theories whatsoever. I was very careful not to do so.
Okay.
You know, what I was doing is I was showing the video and I was showing
photographic
evidence on those photographs or those videos. See, I was asking questions that some people didn't want asked, let alone answered. And that is what was frustrating them, because they couldn't peg me as a conspiracy.
Okay.
Terrorists. Okay. So anyway, all came up. The people who we had befriended during the Gulf War years, military people, people in intel, people in law enforcement, and like I said, all of these people started to contact me and say, hey, Dave, you know, you're asking these tough questions. And I said to them, hey, would you like to talk about it? And they said, sure. So I began interviewing airline pilots, Glenn Stanish, Russ Wittenberg. Russ Wittenberg was a United Airlines pilot who was normally slated to fly 175, but he was not on duty that day.
Okay.
But I talked to them. I talked to, let me see, General Albert Stubblebine from the Pentagon. He was in charge of photo analysis for 25 years. I talked to Colonel George Nelson, who was in charge of identification of aircraft and aircraft parts for 20 years at the Pentagon.
Right.
And so I interviewed all these people and created the sequel, which is entitled 9/11 Ripple Effect.
Okay.
And again, that was released, and that's when things got really strange.
Okay.
Like I said, there was already some tension going on between myself and Joyce because I you know, like I said, we were having a disagreement as to which direction the radio show was going.
Okay.
And I won't get into the grisly details about what happened, but I ended up having to go back east. Joyce and I, of course, we were living in Missouri at the time.
Okay.
But my mom lived in Massachusetts on Cape Cod.
Okay.
And I'd stopped in for a visit with her when I went back east to cover the Ed and Elaine Brown issue in New Hampshire.
Okay.
So I went to visit with my mom, and my mom, unfortunately, was going around the golden corner. Dementia was setting in.
Okay.
So when I got back to Missouri, I said to Joyce, I've got to go back east. I've got to take care of my mom and get her into a nursing home. She can't be left alone. And that's when Joyce said, well, look, why don't we just go ahead and do the divorce? Let's just get this divorce happening.
Okay.
So anyway, I went back east, and as the song goes, she got the gold mine, and I got the shaft.
Okay, okay.
And so that was a very difficult time. And to go along with that, I had a little bit of a disagreement with William Lewis about the disbursement of funds as from the sale of the documentaries.
Sure.
And he pulled a legal stunt, knowing that I was no longer in Missouri and all my documents and records were there. And so he blocked me from duplicating or selling my own documentaries.
Okay.
So between my mom going nuts and the divorce, Joyce pulled the plug on the radio show one morning. I was getting ready to go on the air, and then basically she said, Scott, don't put him on.
Really?
So after 10 years of being on the Power Hour, I didn't even get a chance to say thank you and goodbye to the listeners.
Okay.
So that was a very, very dark period in my life.
Right.
So, and that was one of the reasons why I just said, the heck with this 9/11 truth movement, the heck with the Patriot movement. If I trust in my foxhole, what's the defend up?
Right.
So that's one of the reasons why I got them. And besides, there were so many people that were involved in the 9/11 truth movement that they were in it for the wrong reasons. They were in it for the money or for the sale of their books or the praise or the accolades or the recognition. If you're in it for any of those reasons, you're in it for the wrong reasons.
Right.
So that's why I divorced myself from it. I said, look, I've been down that rabbit hole. I was at this for 24/7, 365 for 15 years. I put my life into it, and I had nothing to show for it. So I just said, the heck with it. I just want to be a human being again. So I dropped out and just went back to my musical roots.
Okay.
So that's sort of what happened.
Right.
Now, it's happened in the past couple of years since I, with what's happened in the past couple of years, I'm feeling a calling. And
okay.
I'm at the point right now, I've had a couple of networks approach me. I've turned down several offers in the past 10 years to go back on the air. I said I've already been, wore out the T-shirts.
Okay.
But with what's going on with our country, I feel like I'm being caught. So we'll see what happens.
Okay.
I'm not really enthusiastic about it. I'm a reluctant warrior. It's a battle that I don't really want to fight, but I don't know if there's anybody else that's got the perspective that I do.
Well,
because there's plenty of blame to go around on both parties.
Well, just the names that you set out there at the beginning of this interview tells me that you were right at the beginnings of what we call the modern patriot movement in this country, and that Tom Valentine, those people, they were on Shortwave and all that stuff, way at the beginning. So you got an exposure on to this system, you know, this movement, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, some people say, oh, well, you're helping. You're one of the founders of the 9/11 truth movement. No, I'm not a founder. Hey, look, I'm just telling it like it is. people want to say, oh gosh, you're this or you're that. I don't care what anybody says about it. You know, I really don't.
But what
you either stand in the light or you hide in the darkness.
The work you did, Dave, was very important to uncovering what really happened, though, and that's where I must respect and honor that work that you've done in this area. Okay.
Well, I definitely appreciate that, you know, and I'm damn proud of the work that I did.
Yes.
I mean, I'm always going to be, I'll be able to look at myself in the mirror and always smile, because I know that I was in it for the right reasons. I did what I believe to be the right thing to do, and I tried to maintain integrity and do so in such a way that I wasn't going to, you know, hurt or disparage, you know, anybody in my wake other than the people who were the perpetrators and the bad boys.
Right.
So, you know, like I said, I'm proud of what I accomplished during those years.
Right. Y'all came down to the Chariot Inn 1 year, and I was there and saw you sing some of your music, in fact. You performed some of your music, and then y'all were giving us information on the Persian Gulf syndrome and all that information, which was really good. So you actually helped get that out, too, with Joyce, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, I always was, and I always will be a musician.
Right.
And so, yes, 25 years ago, in 95, that's when I began putting together the songs for the first album, and the first album is called Will Someone Listen?
Okay.
Now, all my music is available for free on YouTube.
Okay.
All you have to do is type in my name.
Oh,
Dave,
that's great.
Dave Von Kleist. And as soon as you type in V-O-N, in 1999, of me doing one of the songs from my first album entitled You Won't Be Trusted Anymore. And it was a song about the lying media, the fake news.
Okay.
Now, this is 21 years ago. I was singing about fake news.
Oh, my God. You know, that's on. That's good.
Well, yeah. And I hadn't thought about any of these songs that I've done in years. I was shocked to find this. Oh, my gosh. Boy, I look like a real young whippersnapper doing that song, you know.
Right.
But I was really surprised that came out of nowhere. And then shortly after that, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember who it was that sent it to me. He works with Pastor Butch Paul. What's his name? George something. I can't. Anyway, apparently he compiled a video of seven songs, because I used to play Pastor Butch's church.
Okay.
And so here's another video with me doing a whole bunch of my old songs. And I went, and, like I said, I hadn't listened to these songs in, gosh, you know, 10, 15 years. And all of a sudden, these are blasts from the past. And I'm realizing, oh, my God, I can't believe I was singing about all of the stuff 20 years ago.
Right.
And it's happening now.
Right.
So I would encourage your listeners out there, yeah, go ahead, go to YouTube, type my name and give a listen to some of these songs, and then ask yourself, how the heck did he know about this stuff 20 years ago?
Well, you were early on. You're way ahead of everybody else on this.
I'm not trying to toot my horn, but, you know, I don't know. It was one of those things where, you know, I guess I was in the right place at the right time or the wrong place at the wrong time. I don't know. They were just songs that came to me. I had to record them, and here they are again. It's it's just amazing.
I was watching.
So yeah, I'm.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. You.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I was watching some of the clips today on the memorial services, and they had clips on there that prove how much of an inside job this 9/11 was. You know, they're using clips now that attorneys had to force out of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and they're actually using those clips in describing 9/11 today. But they're actually, to me, I know the clips, and I know that they reveal that there were some clips of a couple of firemen on the first floor that had been boogered up their faces, see? And they had those clips in there. And Gurley, attorney out of Dallas, forced the NIST to release some of that stuff, see? But they were keeping it secret, see? So
yeah.
Yeah,
Well, I certainly hope so, but, you know, let's face it, you know, this is a huge conspiracy that involved many different people.
It is.
Of course, they were all compartmentalized. One hand didn't know what the other was doing.
Right.
But there was somebody behind the scenes that was coordinating all of this. And hopefully, within our lifetimes, these perpetrators will be, you know, brought to justice. But I mean, there's going to have to be a political earthquake, and I think we're seeing it happen right now.
Right.
A political earthquake that's going to have to shake all this information out, and it's not just about the 9/11 catastrophe.
Right.
It's also going to be involved the Oklahoma City bombing,
right.
TWA Flight 800. The London Tube bombing, 7/7.
Right.
I mean, there's so much that's been going on, so many false flags, and this COVID-19 thing is just one of many, many, many fabrications.
Yes, it is.
And hopefully the truth will come out.
Well, I hope so.
Well, yeah, me too. So I'm in the process right now of trying to figure out, you know, if I'm going to go back on the air.
Okay.
If I can get plugged into a network. I mean, it would be one thing to be on a single little radio station in Podunk, you know, wherever.
Right.
But I would rather see if I couldn't reach out through a network. I don't know. I really don't know if I should.
I think whatever you do, it's going to be successful. Because you're very, very objective about it, and you're very factual in your presentations, what I've noticed over the years.
Well, I try to be anyway, and I try to deliver the information in a way that's palatable.
Right.
You know, if you were remembering the Power Hour show, I mean, I use music and I use comedy to be able to communicate.
Right.
Because that's what I do. I've always been a musician. I've always had character voices. I've always used humor. And that's what, if you recall the bumper music that I used to do,
right.
You know, GW and the Carlisle Group singing all your favorite songs, you know.
Right.
I mean, this is one way of communicating, and the bad boys just can't stand it when you point and laugh at them. And that's what I was doing. I think that's why the Power Hour was such a successful show. Is because we could take very heavy, you know, very serious issues and put them, I would put them together in such a way, in such a presentation, where we could actually not only learn about these issues, but we could laugh about them and also become inspired. So, you know, that's sort of my approach towards broadcasting. And like I said, I feel like I'm being called back into service, and I'm reluctant to do so. I mean, I got severely burned, and like I said, I was traumatized with it. I'm not looking for a string quartet or, you know, anybody to feel sorry for me or anything like that. But
well, go for it, Dave, because I've been in full support of you the whole time. I've really been supporting you for years in your work, you know, from behind the scenes. I've always thought a lot about you and your work. So.
Well, I do appreciate that, and I have to be honest that, you know, through the years, you know, when I left the 9/11 movement, and I just sort of,
right.
You know, after being booted off the radio show,
right.
You know, I swore I would never do this again, and like I said, I have no desire. I don't need the kudos. I don't need the praise and the accolades and all that. I still have people contact me after all these years of being, you know, out of the public eye. I still have people contacting me. You know, I remember and it's kind of humbling to get, you know, an email or somebody pops up, you know, on Skype or on Facebook or whatever,
right.
And says, hey, well, we remember your work and we appreciate that. So, I mean, it's nice to get that recognition. But if that is what motivates people to do what they do, they're in it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, right. Is there any final statements or any kind of closing statements you'd like to make? Sort of at the end of the interview here. What do you think?
Well, it's... To me, it's just common sense. I mean, we know that the media has been lying to us for generations.
Right.
If you go back to the mid-70s with the Frank Church committee hearings, where the CIA was grilled and had to admit that they had indeed infiltrated all of the news networks, they had indeed infiltrated all of the print media, all of the broadcast media. So if anybody seems to think that we have a free press, I got some beachfront property in Colorado that I want to sell you. The media, their job is to condition and to guide the American public in a direction that they want you to go. So, if a population is raised and weaned on a steady diet of lies,
right,
then common sense will tell you that when the truth appears, it's going to taste funny. And a lot of people will reject it altogether. So, it's so much easier to consume sweet, chocolate-covered lies than the bitter truth. And this is one of the reasons why, when you present facts, when you present history, when you present common sense, a lot of times it's rejected because it doesn't resonate with what people have been taught to believe.
Yes, exactly.
And it was Mark Twain said, it's always easier to fool people than to convince them that they've been fooled. And that's where we are. I could put facts, I could put truth, I could put common sense before people, but if they're not ready to accept that, in order to accept it, they're going to have to reject what they've already been told. And that is such a nutpack. It really is.
The truth is so preposterous that it's hard.
I'm saying, I'm somewhat reluctant. I don't know if we can...
Yeah, the truth is so about 9/11 is so preposterous that people have a hard time getting there.
Yeah,
see what I mean? And Fran Schur has written 21 articles for A&E911truth.org.
Only because of the.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
Yeah, well, like I said, if the information that's being presented does not resonate. If it doesn't resonate with what people have already been told,
right,
then they're going to reject it.
Right.
And that's what makes it so difficult, to break through the wall of lies that's been created, for generations,
exactly.
For decades.
On a lot of different issues and events, right? Many things. Well, I want to thank you for being with us this evening.
I'm sorry you dropped out. I didn't hear what you said
I want to thank you, Dave, for being with us this evening. And I appreciate all the good insights you have and all your opinions on what's going on out there. And I wish you the best of luck on your new endeavors. Okay?
Well, I thank you so much. And like I said, I have no idea where
okay.
at this point. They say that, people have a bumper sticker that says, God is my co-pilot.
Right.
Well, if he's your co-pilot, you better switch seats and let him drive.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Well, thank you very much, Dave.
It's up to him. It's not up to me.
That's right. Thank you very much, Dave. Okay. Good night. Bye-bye.
That's our program for today, the first hour. The second hour, we're going to have Fran Schur, a pre-recorded interview several years ago, and it's the psychology of 9/11, which I think is very, very powerful and very, very important, because it was preposterous what happened there, and it's so preposterous that it's hard for the public in general to figure out what exactly went wrong there. And so that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about something that was preposterously pulled off, and it was an inside job. Thank you for listening, and good night. God bless each and every one of you.